Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Andy.
Am I the last one on?
We don't know that until someone else comes on.
Right.
You never know how many we're going to get. Wait another minute or two and we'll do a more formal roll call because it's always hard to tell.
Is that Ken talking? I've got a bad connection or something.
It's Michael Charnas.
Oh, hi, Michael.
Hi. While we're waiting, Ken, what did you think of that preliminary study on the use of hand sanitizer?
Yeah.
And blood alcohol concentration.
I know it. I asked Tom Gentry to go ahead and do calculations about what we could expect, but I don't know. I'm just very, very doubtful. Particularly if it's if the BACs are supposed to come from inhalation.
Yeah. I was surprised at the data. For those who are listening, we were asked by a reporter for the Wall Street Journal to comment on a study which has not been published that purports to show significant but low blood alcohol concentrations after the application of hand sanitizer, the alcohol-based disinfectants that are now used commonly in hospitals and even outside of hospitals. And they were showing a range of concentrations under 0.02 to at most 0.03, which appeared to result from inhalation rather than absorption through the skin. And the question was being asked in relation to fetal alcohol syndrome or fetal alcohol spectrum disorders and whether or not we would want to say anything about the use of hand sanitizers in women. And the problem is that there wasn't a lot of methodology. It was really a PowerPoint slide set rather than a manuscript.
Hello?
Yes?
It's Ken Jones.
Ken, how are you?
I'm good, Michael. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'd like to just have everybody time to say their names so that we have a good record of who's on the call, because we don't always catch people's names as they come on. So, have Charlie
Goodlett.
Yeah. Anyone else? Just speak up.
Sarah Matson.
Okay, good.
Elizabeth Sowell.
Yeah.
Craig Stewart.
Hey. Anne Streisguth.
Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Ken Warren.
Okay.
Elizabeth Moore.
Hi.
Andy Aronson.
Okay.
Ari Foden. Susan Meyer.
Van Davison.
Okay. Any others?
Jennifer Thomas should be joining us shortly.
Okay. We'll hear when she comes in because she'll beep. So we sent around last time comments on the comments, some discussion that we had at our last teleconference. And what we should be trying to do is refining some of these to specific projects that people can then begin to get together and write up as UO1s or U24s for the renewal. I wonder, before we go further, Ken, if you can just bring us up to date on where NIAAA stands in terms of the RFP and what you're looking for in terms of time, scope, and everything else.
Hoping that we'll have an RFP or an LOI, whichever we are is the current practice at NIH, to be able to put out by the beginning of summer. I would say by the time of the meeting, which will be held in Washington D.C., of the steering committee meeting. The person who has the lead on it is Lori, so I'll just turn to her and ask her in terms of how it's coming. Okay.
Do you have a sense of deadlines and budget?
So the deadline will probably be around December, in the month of December.
Okay.
And we need to request the date from NIH, a receipt date for it. And I guess that's something we'll have to turn to fairly soon to be able to get the date.
Yeah.
As I think we may have mentioned on the last call, NIH is changing procedures somewhat with the 424 and the new electronics. The new electronics submission system, I assume that we'll still be using the 398 at that point for applications that are UO1s. However, with a number of the other changes, some of the policies are changing in terms of whether we come out with an RFA or whether we come out with a letter of invitation. And these are issues that are sort of a little tricky to follow at this time because where the control emanates from, which is the Office of Extramural Activities in Building 1, has been going through a number of changes on their own, and the calls that I've made there have not really given me a good clear answer yet as to what the method is. So it's one thing that we're going to have to clarify fairly soon. For the people who were engaged in PASS, where we were able to use an LOI method, I think that worked well. But the concern that I have is that we're going to have to use a different system.
Okay. So, are most of the people on this call planning?
The only one who's hearing a tremendous amount of static.
No, it's hard to hear.
Really? I've got a clear line. Is anyone else getting static?
I have a clear line.
No.
I'm hearing a fair bit.
Me too.
I'm very clear.
I'm crystal clear. You know what? Rather than try all over again, let's go with this. Let's talk loudly and speak slowly. And if people can't hear, then we'll abort and start over again. Is anybody really unable to decipher what I'm saying?
Just barely make it out. I'm going to try myself calling back in. And see.
Okay. Maybe the people who have static can try to call back, get a clean connection. We'll wait a moment.
Michael, do you want to go on in the interim while you wait for them to come back on?
I'm sort of hoping they'd be right back on.
Okay, there's one.
Who came back?
This is Andy, and I'm pretty sure it's my phone, not the call. Sorry about that.
Okay, all right. Get a new plan. So, is there anybody on this call who does not expect to be in Washington during our July CFAST meeting?
This is Craig. There is a chance that I will not be able to be there, but I think between Andy and I, one of the two of us will be there with 100% probability.
Okay. Any others?
I'm unable to be there, and Fred won't be there either, but we are sending two people from our office, Janet Huggins, who was with us last time, in when we a year ago when we met, and has been active in the data collection for the study we just did, and also Therese Grant, who's the new director of our unit and is the head of the PCAP program and is doing work on early interventions with mothers and babies and so forth, and they will be there to represent the neonatal ultrasound component and any other parts that get attached to it.
And do both need to be there?
Yes.
Anyone else who won't be in Washington? So,
there are some individuals, obviously, who are not on the call, who were part of the, you know, who've been a part of CFAS, like the Jacobsons are not on at all on this call.
Right.
Nor were they on in the last.
Right. So we don't really know what their intentions are.
That's correct.
Okay.
I think someone else just came on.
Yeah, it's Jennifer. Hello.
Hi, Jennifer.
Jennifer, are you going to be in Washington for the CFAS meeting?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Do we have, Joanne, another CFAS call between now and our meeting in Washington?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Do we have another call between now and our meeting in Washington, or is the call in late June going to be canceled for RSA?
It's June 20th, so it's the week before RSA, but it's going to be after, it's going to be 2 days after the meeting in Washington.
No, the meeting in Washington's in July, isn't it?
Yeah. Right.
July, correct. So we do have June.
Okay, yep. We have June 20th. I'm just thinking in terms of setting tasks, that we might aim to produce one-page summaries. We did sort of a paragraph, but to flesh out the beginnings of proposals so that we get to our meeting in July, that we have something substantial to work on after our June call that will take shape and allow us to really refine the proposal, because that won't be our last meeting before submission, but it'll be a key planning meeting, giving us the rest of the summer and possibly early fall before we meet again. Does that sound reasonable to people?
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So what I thought that we might do during this call is try to identify a lead person for each project that we're going to try to work up, and then have those sent around, and between now and the next meeting, have people comment on the projects and also on whether we have the right constellation of projects, whether any that are being proposed separately could be combined, and so on. So although we've been over this ground again before, I'd like to cover some of it again, which is just to make sure we're together on what people will write up. And we had talked before about having more projects and fewer cores. And Ed's not here, but Ed and I would take responsibility for the administrative cluster, which currently includes the pilot projects, and might perhaps include neurobehavior. We have to discuss exactly what informatics will be. There's some sentiment for keeping it as a core. And everything else would be in the domain of a UO1. Is that a fair description of what was discussed last time?
Well, I can speak administratively for NIAAA, and that is the approach that we've been advocating, and particularly the approach that TK has, and given that he's the director of the institute, I think that that's the wisest course.
This is Craig, and let me just ask, just jump in. I noticed your verbiage there. Is there any sentiment not to keep informatics as a core?
There was discussion last time of having clusters within the administrative core, And the clusters that were mentioned included pilot projects, neurobehavior, and possibly informatics.
Okay.
And at that time, there was a forceful argument in favor of keeping informatics as a core for maintaining the identity and the recognition that the core now gets for the people who are involved in maintaining their motivation to be part of the consortium.
Yeah. Okay. So we're all on the same page then.
This is sort of as far as we've got, but we haven't come to resolution of that.
I have a question, Michael. This is Sarah. I haven't been on the calls, but I didn't realize, I hadn't heard that the neurobehavioral core was possibly going to be included in the administrative core. It seems like it's a major part of the whole project, and it seems unusual that it would be part of the administrative core rather than its own core.
So I think the concept at the time was that there would be both a project as well as the core, and the core part would be just assuring that people were using the same tests and everything else, but not a full core, that also facial imaging, brain imaging, and dysmorphology would become projects.
Mm-hmm.
So that specific questions that neurobehavior was going to answer would be included in UO1s, but there would need to be some facility or mechanism for assuring that people got all of the instructions, booklets, and training that they needed to be able to uniformly administer any of the materials that were going to be part of the projects.
Okay.
And you know, nothing is set at all. This was just, I would say, a nascent idea that was trying to respond in part to comments similar to what Ken just made now, that we were heavy in cores and light in projects on the last time, and that the preference was to be heavier on projects and lighter on cores.
Okay.
So, you know, as I said, all this is up for grabs. Certainly when we're together in July, we'll have an opportunity to go over this, but I just want to make sure that we have a couple of opportunities before July, now and then between now and June and going over it again in June, to figure out what the projects are really going to be and who will take the lead on each one. Tina's not on this call, correct?
No, she's in South Africa.
Okay. That's a good excuse. I like that.
Is she there with the Phil May team?
She is, Ken.
So there's no one from Phil's team on this call. Is that right?
No one from where?
From Phil's project, Phil May's. I don't think so.
Yeah. No, since no one answered.
Okay. That's a safe bet.
Michael?
Yeah.
I'd like to raise a question about pilot cores, pilot projects. We had a pilot project in the last go-around, but we do not see ourselves being a pilot project for the next round. I mean, we expect to be writing a UO1. So is that the understanding of other people, that just because you were a pilot project for the last time, if you demonstrated that this was a successful idea, that then you would be writing a UO1 for the next round. Is that correct?
I think that we're looking for recommendations for UO1's cores at the moment. And the process that I'm
talking about cores, I'm talking about project, UO1 project.
UO1 project. So the process that I've suggested, and we can certainly talk about the process itself, is that we have people who have proposals for projects for UO1 proposed right up now. We've had sort of half-page recommendations, and now to come forward something that's more of a full page that we can look at as a whole, it's conceivable that between now and July we'll decide that some proposals that come forward as projects, as UO1s, can be rearranged and grouped with others, and that there may be more that come forward than we can have, and we'll take advantage of our time together and the presence of a scientific advisory board to help us refine this to a point that we have the very best project to put forward. But at this point, we're not looking for pilot projects. We're looking for UO1's project.
Thank you. Yeah, that clarifies it. Just wanted to be sure.
Yeah. So there were a couple of interesting ideas that were really discussed for the first time last time, and I want to just review those. Sarah wasn't present, and Sarah Mattson's input is going to be welcome just in this discussion. But one of the goals of the consortium has been to find mechanisms for earlier diagnosis, methods for earlier diagnosis. And one of the questions that came up was whether one of the tests that emerged from Ann's studies on the Brazelton of failure of habituation to light was something that could be used across other tests, that it might be an early route of attentional deficit. It's something that has some correlation in animal studies, and it has the potential to be useful in association with perhaps structural measures that would be done at a younger age. And so I want to just throw that out for further discussion to see how we can do this. One thought was to combine neonatal ultrasound measures with this type of test as a way of pushing back the envelope for diagnosis to an earlier time. And Sarah, this is the first time you're probably hearing about this, but I'd be very interested in your comments.
Yeah, it is the first time, and it sounds intriguing. I guess I have a few questions, and I'm sorry, Anne, I don't know the study that Michael's referring to, but I wonder if the specificity has been tested in terms of if it's going to be used for diagnosis, we need to know that it distinguishes exposed children from children with other.
Anyone there?
Anne, are you there?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were still.
Sarah, I missed the end of your comment.
We didn't hear the end of your what you said.
I don't know what the last thing you heard was. Would you like me to start from the beginning?
You had begun to talk about whether specificity had been examined.
Yeah, that's my first thought in terms of using anything for early diagnosis. We need to know whether it is something that can distinguish exposed or affected kids from kids with other disorders.
So, Anne, do you have any information about specificity?
What I was reporting was that it was the strongest measure related to prenatal alcohol, you know, to our measures of dose. However, it is not strongly related, as it's not strongly related with many of the other neurobehavioral scores that we get later in life. So it may not be as exciting to use for that reason, although it's certainly the only thing. The stuff we got in the neonatal period was, we did a lot of neonatal things with the babies, and it was much stronger than anything we got from the Baileys at eight and 18 months, which are very, you know, were much less linked to alcohol and were much less linked to some of the other data, too, some of the later data. So we didn't do anything then until 4 years. So during that first 4 year period, certainly the stuff that we did behaviorally, like reflexes, and those were, you know, general, they were good. And I don't know how much time we'd have to pull out some of this data. We could try to get something ready for you that might be useful in terms of Sarah's question.
Yeah, it would be nice if you could just help us understand a little bit the potential utility of this test in the early years, and not necessarily to reanalyze your data, but just to summarize this for us, addressing the question of how sensitive it was, and if you have any data published or readily available, how specific it might be to alcohol exposure per se and not other diagnoses.
Mm-hmm.
That would be helpful because a number of people were excited about this as a potential early measure.
Mm-hmm.
We don't yet have a good sense of sensitivity and specificity.
I'll see what we can. We don't have anything published on this, but I will see what I can pull together for you.
That would be great.
Get you something, okay?
Okay. And one of the thoughts that was considered in our last call was whether measurements like this or perhaps other behavioral measurements could be used in conjunction with neonatal ultrasound in prospective studies where children were being evaluated from birth. In those discussions, we talked about potentially Moscow Stomay South Africa study and other South Africa cohorts as areas where this could be done.
Mm-hmm. Well, we would be very interested in collaborating with other ongoing sites, particularly with the neonatal ultrasound, because as far as I can see it, that's really the best thing that we've come up with, and we certainly could plan to build in some other behavioral measures, but in many settings that's more complicated. You know, just because of how soon mothers leave the hospital and so forth.
Yeah.
We developed the neonatal ultrasound because we thought it could be treated like a lab test. You know, any mother that you had a lead on was a heavy drinker, you could just wheel up the ultrasound and get a scan.
Yeah.
So it seemed more like a lab test than all the special training needed for the behavioral things.
And if you were to see this come forward as a UO1, do you see this as something that would be part of other UO1s for identified prospective projects, or do you see this as a freestanding UO1?
Well, I don't know. It would just be, you know, depend on what works out best for the group. We're very interested in building the neonatal ultrasound into Moscow, South Africa, and any other groups. I don't know what's happened with Ukraine. Ken, maybe you can tell us, but any other groups that are proposing ongoing data collection as newborns. I think it would be useful at the same time if we also proposed some here, so that we would be continuing, and maybe here we could, because we've done so much more with working with mothers and babies here, we might be able to develop some good programs for mothers and babies that would tie in with the neonatal ultrasound work.
Do you have a good population of heavily exposed neonates?
Well, we run this big statewide program that has babies, any baby who's known to be born to a mother that was abusing alcohol or drugs during pregnancy, and the mother hasn't a lot of other resources, can get referred into our 3-year program, our mother-child, parent-child program, so that they can... You know, we they're for 3 years in a state-funded program. Then, having highly trained advocates that work with them on
right.
a variety of things.
So, can I ask you to contact Tina and Phil
mm-hmm.
and discuss with them how you would like to see this go forward?
Okay.
And whether it should be part of UO1s that they have, because they each have prospective studies that they're contemplating for their respective populations, or whether you see this as a freestanding UO1.
Okay.
That in advance of the June phone meeting that you could send something to Joanne that she would tabulate that would be a one-page proposal. That we'd have an opportunity to look at maybe in the week before our next meeting, June 20th.
Okay. Sure.
That would be great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm really sorry I can't be at the summer meeting, but we I planned a family reunion 9 years ago.
Yes. Okay. All right. So, Sarah, you weren't here the last time, and we sort of let me just flip forward a little bit. We had comments that you made and not really an opportunity to discuss them with you. And I don't know if you have those in front of you, but they were comments regarding a neurobehavioral profile, facial imaging and brain imaging. I wonder if you want to expand on those at all or tell us how you would like to see some of these things realized in a in another project.
Who was that question directed?
That's for Sarah Matson.
Sarah. Is she still, Sarah, are you still there? I think we lost her.
I think we lost Sarah again.
Oh, wait, I'm back. I'm here.
You're back.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm back.
Did you hear the question, Sarah?
You, I think I did hear the question, but I'm not quite clear on what you want me to say. I can tell you that I what I sent to you was my ideas about things that I thought were going to be important for the continuation, and they included specific questions about the neurobehavioral profile, facial imaging, and brain imaging. And the way I structured my statement was, you know, sort of, it was very self-centered, of course, but what I saw, you know, where I could participate. So is that the document that you're talking about, Michael?
Yes. That is just sort of give us a very brief outline of how you can take some of that information and turn it into a UO1.
Okay. And stop me if I'm going in the wrong direction, but the way I was understanding it was that a project that I might be involved in would be focused on the San Diego population and utilizing aspects of the consortium project, and that's the neurobehavioral assessment, facial imaging, dysmorphology, of course, and brain imaging. And so I had set forth several specific aims, and I can just start talking about those. For the neurobehavioral profile, really is to continue the work towards determining whether there's a phenotype, behavioral phenotype, in the population of kids that we're studying. These data, of course, would be combined with data from other sites. A second aim was to look at, it's really a part of the first aim, but to compare whether the phenotype that we see in kids' morphology can be used to identify kids without facial dysmorphology. So we would be looking at kids that are right now called not FAS on the dysmorphology exam, or kids that were deferred. So that would help us with diagnosis, or I guess identification of those kids. And then finally, to see whether we can extend our age range downward to use either the same measures or similar measures in a younger population of kids. Right now, we start at age 7. So it would be useful, and this is related to what you asked earlier, if we could lower the age that we were assessing children. And then the second portion and third portion are really sort of related to the larger picture, but that's to use the facial imaging and brain imaging in a similar way in the same population, and to then combine those data sets, facial imaging,
neuropsychological data and brain imaging into a, you know, a more comprehensive picture. And I think, of course, dysmorphology, I keep leaving that out, but it's definitely a core of the of our goal of this project too.
What are the components of the project that you would interact with in this particular study, which I guess would be based in San Diego?
What other components? Is that what you asked me?
Yes. How would this involve other components of the consortium?
I would interact directly with the projects that are, well, if there is a neurobehavioral core, of course, it would utilize that that or whatever it's going to be. It would require the interaction with Elizabeth, both Elizabeths in the facial imaging and brain imaging, because one of the main goals is to combine those data sets together and to get this comprehensive picture. Of course, it would require continued support of the dysmorphology group and the informatics, however that's set up as well.
Okay, and are there other projects that would be doing the same thing? This is an open question, because what you're talking about is using the major modalities that are being developed within the consortium, dysmorphology, brain imaging, facial morphology, and neurobehavior, to look at a particular population. We had talked about extending this study in a smaller number of populations than we had, including particularly South Africa and Moscow, as well as the Plains and a couple of sites in the U.S. And are there things that you're proposing here that we would be doing in parallel at those other sites?
I believe there would be. I haven't seen a similar document from other sites, but I would imagine that Phil May's South Africa site would be doing something very similar, although I don't know where he's going with the intervention portion of his project, so maybe he's going to expand that and reduce the other portion. I don't know. I could see the Plains population. I think it's something that really could be done at any of the sites that have, you know, the same age child.
A question that came up the last time concerned the ability to do the neuroimaging. And Ken, do we know any more about what's available at Stellenbosch?
In terms of neuroimaging?
Yes.
No, I haven't gotten any details on it.
But, okay.
I do know that they have a fairly good facility.
Okay.
George Fine, who I actually saw earlier today, and I forgot to ask him about it, does have a project in which he is looking at individuals in Stellenbosch.
George Fine?
Yeah, George Fine.
Okay.
Okay, I think he's looking at an adolescent AIDS population, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
But I do not... I haven't had the opportunity, but I know when I spoke with him in the past, he said it was, he indicated to me that it was, you know, at par with anything he works at here in the U.S. But we need to go ahead and get some more information on that.
Yeah, I need to know what type of magnet it is, too.
Yeah, I think we'll need to find that out.
Because we might have to do a little preliminary work with a physicist or something to figure out.
And the other scenario is right now is that the people who are obviously in control of that magnet are not a part of our CFAS project or our PAS project, because we do not have imaging in either of those two studies.
I think this proposal also raises a question about how to organize projects.
Yeah.
Are projects going to be geographic? Are they going to be thematic? Are we going to be looking at certain prospect studies, certain cross-sectional studies, certain interventional studies as unique projects? And I would just ask people for their thoughts, because I could see, in a way, a risk in the type of study that Sarah's proposed, which I think is really very much in line with what the consortium's trying to accomplish, having it presented as potentially three different projects, one in South Africa, one in Moscow, and one in San Diego. And what are people's ideas about how to take this cross-cutting approach and organize it into discrete UO1s? So what are people thinking?
Well, I was just thinking about, you know, having, I mean, I guess we're talking about neurobehavior, facial imaging, and brain imaging, right?
As well as dysmorphology.
Oh, dysmorphology. Well,
yeah.
All right, Elizabeth.
Correlating facial, I'm sorry to interrupt whoever's talking, but correlating the facial dysmorphology, you know, both from the dysmorphologist and also from the 3D work with the brain imaging, you know, I think is one of the exciting opportunities, at least from my perspective.
Well, so the way I'm envisioning it is, in a way, I hadn't.
Hello.
Can I keep talking? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So the facial imaging, neurobehavior, and brain imaging all would, in my view, be three projects. Though they would each have common, you know, identical aims. So each project would have their own aim specific to neurobehavior or facial imaging or brain imaging, but each would have a common aim as well. Now, of course, then the problem becomes the population.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking of brain imaging in San Diego, L.A., if we can add that as a site, South Africa and New Mexico. So there would have to be some overlap of, I would say, more than one location.
What are we doing in New Mexico?
Well, I don't know yet, but I was thinking we could do brain imaging, and it sounds like facial imaging.
Where are you going to do it in New Mexico?
I don't know. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
We have the population there.
How about Phil May's population?
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Phil May's is
not in New Mexico.
It's not in New Mexico.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Plains Indians. Forgive
me. Yeah, it's in the Plains, and it's in – and his population in South Africa is really out in – well, it depends on how many subjects you want, because it's about 40 – it's about 45 kilometers outside of...
But I thought we talked about that and agreed that we could send those kids to Stellenbosch.
Yeah, if it comes back, yeah. We decided with the driver, it's not that many individuals, and we can do that.
Yeah. Well, these are critical questions, I think.
About the Plains Indians, I don't think that they're going to tolerate doing brain imaging.
Okay.
They won't tolerate doing photographs.
Okay, well, then I'm overstepping. Then forget that. San Diego, South Africa... and Los Angeles.
In Moscow, I understand the imaging may not be up to snuff.
No.
Is that right?
No. That's what I understand is that it's not. I mean, that's what Ed keeps saying.
It's not up to snuff where?
In Moscow.
It's like a half site unit?
Yeah, it's a 0.5 Tesla, and Ed is always very skeptical.
Yeah, so we're really talking for brain imaging about San Diego, Los Angeles, and South Africa. Is that right?
Yeah.
Realistically.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think, you know, we haven't talked at all about incorporating other United States sites, and I don't know if that's something people would be interested in, but, you know, Claire Coles was originally involved in the very early, early, early stages of this project and submitted a UO1, I think, or maybe a pilot project, which didn't get included, but she certainly has a population that could be included in Atlanta.
Right. At our previous meeting, I'm just looking for my notes, there was some talk about inviting Claire Coles. Claire Coles, Carl Keane, and Frederick Wurst in as new investigators to look at, these are Tina's comments, development of novel biomarkers in the case of Frederick Wurst, looking using Claire's computer-based interventions, which went down as young as 3 years. And possibly using Phil May's New South Africa population as well as Moscow to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some ideas, and I guess the proposal regarding Claire Coles cross-cut with some of the ideas regarding earlier diagnosis, neonatal ultrasound, and so on, and that they push the age range quite a bit earlier.
I'm going to just say, you know, I didn't mean to, I hope that my comments weren't perceived as stepping on other projects, because the assumption that I was going under was that I was supposed to discuss what I could do in San Diego, and I think I was just tapping into all of the resources that I have here.
Yes. I don't see it that way at all, and I think it really does open a very important question about how to organize this.
Okay.
Because, as I said, we have sites, we have methods, we have the spectrum from diagnosis to intervention, and we have basic science to integrate all into the same consortium. And just those four or five dimensions could be four or five projects, but we also have limitations with some of the sites that we can't do all of these cross-cutting things.
Right.
So, you know, in a way it's hard to do this in a single phone call, and maybe another task for the next phone call is to take some of these possibilities, and maybe it's premature to ask people to write up a page, that maybe the task now should be to figure out the organization, to define what our limitations are, as we've just done, for example, in brain imaging, where we know it's only certain populations, and to get a sense of how many interventional studies will we have. Will the interventional studies be associated with some of these other cross-correlating studies, or will they be separate? We had some discussions before about biomarkers and the need to incorporate them into the next phase of the consortium. It doesn't seem that would necessarily be a project, but something that would be incorporated with other projects. So I think this is a very difficult question to approach in 40 minutes or 45 minutes on a conference call, and something that would really require a lot of dialogue and exchange of information between now and June. But I think it's going to be important to have some idea about this before we get to Washington, so that we can use the time in Washington to really refine the projects, but go there with some sense of what the projects are.
Yeah, I think I agree totally, and I think that it could be perhaps more efficiently and effectively approached if people that were going to deal with specifics that you've been bringing up, Michael, talked individually rather than bring it to this whole group. So, for example, I'm referring to biomarkers are certainly not something that would be part of the study that Sarah's been proposing, because that biomarkers implies something during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And so it seems to me the people that are dealing with prospective studies should be talking on their own about that, and then presenting it to the whole group, and people that are doing the kinds of things that Sarah wants to do should be talking and then bringing it to the group.
Michael, I think Ken's got a good point there, and I just want to add one more layer of complexity to this, and that is in terms of the relationship of the basic science to the human studies. I think in terms of the structure of the consortium, one thing we need to look at is considering building in either what I would call translational aims into these projects, or translational projects as a whole, that could pair relevant basic scientists with the clinical scientists in either an aim within a project or a project on its own.
I think that given the direction of NIH and everything else, that makes terrific sense.
And if we could sort of look at the opportunities of having the various projects that emerge, whether site-directed or concept-directed, as having a goal of having one or more translational aims built into them, that would integrate the basic and clinical sciences better than us coming up with something that would be sort of independent of the discussions going on here today.
Yep. Some of the basic science projects, I think that it would be helpful for the basic science folks to have another conference call just to help get us to the starting gate to be able to identify what should be discrete basic science projects that will inform the whole consortium and which ones will be interactive at the level that Charlie stated. So maybe, Joanne, we can arrange for a conference call again with the basic science people. And we had talked also about inviting some other people in. And maybe before that call, we can have some discussion online.
Right.
About who we would want to include, because this thing can't be too big, but on the other hand, I think that there's room for more basic science than we had to begin with. We can at least get some ideas so that at the next call we can share those ideas and share whatever document we can produce between now and then.
Okay, so you want to have a basic science call before June 20th?
Yes.
Yes.
You know,
make sure Jen and Ed are in on that too, obviously.
Yes. So it should include the Charlie and Feng Zhou and myself, and I can speak for Keith Miller, and Ed and Jennifer Thomas.
And did you say Janet? Is Janet Huggins, is that who you wanted on there?
No, Jennifer Thomas.
Oh, okay.
And then hopefully between now and June, we'll try to get some more information about what can be done with neuroimaging at some of the other sites, particularly South Africa.
Michael, I have a question. In today's conversation and last time's conversation, when you referred to South Africa, you always referred to Phil May's project. What about the project that the Jacobsons have? They also have a baby project that has been, you know, starting a prospective kind of a study. Will that be continuing, or we just haven't discussed it because they haven't been on the last two phone calls?
We have no idea if they have any.
Pardon me?
We have no idea if they have any interest.
Okay.
They're part of the communication that goes out for each one of these calls. So we haven't heard from them yet.
Okay. Well, I'll talk with them, because I know we had talked at one time about collaborating with a neonatal ultrasound with the South Africa component that they were doing. But so I was just surprised it hadn't been mentioned. So
right.
I'll talk to them directly about it.
Okay.
And Michael, I have a question that I don't think I know the answer to this, so I'll ask it. As we prepare for this, are there plans to continue enrolling in new prospective studies, babies or pregnant mothers and babies from either South Africa or Russia?
And can you answer that? My understanding is that Phil has a study that's getting started.
Phil has a study that's getting started. There is the Moscow study, which is started, as I understand it. And
it would continue? Is that
there is potential for that to continue. I'm including that one as ongoing.
Okay.
And given the fact that the Institute is also invested in the PASS study, which is another prospective cohort, I think it extremely likely that we'd be starting any in addition to that. So I would say we're really talking about Moscow, the cohort, Phil May's cohort in South Africa, and the PASS cohort.
Well, it was particularly the PASS cohort I was curious about, as you know, Ken, and I just wanted to see whether that would merge, assuming success on all parts as this moves forward.
There certainly is the potential for that.
Because that would give the PASS cohort, from what I know about it, would give a very strong possibility for example, developing collaborative biomarker studies, because they collect tissue and so forth.
Correct, yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. And that is correct.
Can someone tell me, no one's mentioning the Ukraine project. Where are we standing with that?
Well, that's a pilot project.
Right.
The process of analyzing the data relative to whether we can demonstrate any effect on those fetuses or those newborn babies whose mothers have been drinking based upon the prenatal ultrasounds.
Uh-huh.
And we don't know at this point whether we don't know the results of that analysis.
I see. But so whether or not that would continue as a would move on to become a U01 is hinging on whether or not the prenatal ultrasound is successful. Is that it?
From my perspective, it's certainly successful. If we haven't been able to show with the number of children that we've looked at that there's any value of doing this or that we can demonstrate an effect, I don't see any point in continuing on with that.
Okay.
We're not going to continue on with it. We're not going to propose another project if there's nothing positive that's come out of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When will you have your data?
I think we'll have it by the end of June.
Oh, good. So that'll be available, you know, certainly by RSA or maybe by our CPAS meeting.
I would certainly expect it to be.
Okay, that'll be helpful. So I think we're running out of time, and what I would propose is that I'm going to just outline some tasks that we'll send around in an email that will largely be addressed towards refining and proposing a structure. And we'll have a conference call before the next one to talk again with the basic science group and see what we can come up with that will better integrate with the whole consortium and what direction that will take. So I'll send something around hopefully in the next couple of days. And we've set some tasks. Anne is going to look into some of her old data on light habituation. We're going to learn more if we can about imaging in South Africa. And there'll be some discussions among people from the different groups to see whether those who are doing cross-cutting techniques, different modalities, want to propose single UO1s with a single modality across multiple sites, or would like to try to implement multiple modalities all at one site as one basic question to begin to address. And I'll try to propose more discrete questions that everybody can work on.
Right. The only thing that I would add is that, you know, whatever the approach, they should be projects that need a consortia to be pursued.
Yes.
Ken, could you say that louder, please?
Okay. Whatever the approach, they should clearly be projects that could not be done in the absence of the consortia. In other words, it's not just RO1s.
Right.
Bundled together.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments? If not, thank you, and I'll be sending something out hopefully in the next couple of days.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye.